I think I was able to be likable because I overate. I don't blame the food or my reaching for it. So the physical is one thing. If I take away the food but don't change as a person so that I don't deal with the emotional and I don't have something that takes care of me on a spiritual level, then I'm really lost. That's when I will have a nervous breakdown. That's when I will find another compulsion to use because I have this unfillable hole. So I want to talk a little bit about footwork. I want to talk a little bit about everything. And I want you to know that maybe all of us, but I can certainly speak for myself, is every time someone got up to speak to us, I thought, they're the best. I could never talk like them. What are they saying? I better take notes. Oh, my God. Marine's not going to be good enough. Oh, I'm making no sense. Look at my notes. They make no sense. No. Okay, then just listen, April. Just listen. Just listen. Go with God. Then I looked at my text because someone had texted me saying, just carry the message. And I just thought, okay, so that's that other, that's the spiritual level, which is I'm going to tell you what comes into my mind based on my notes. And hopefully it'll help someone. What I have found to me is the basis of my program is honesty. And the more honest I can be, which means the more uncomfortable I am in saying it aloud, the healthier I am, and the more it can help you. So I guess we'll start with the most embarrassing part. And I want you to tell you that my name isn't April, it's Anne or something like that when I tell you this. So but I just was thinking about this, and this actually makes a lot of sense to me. It may make no sense to you. When I realize I haven't gone to the bathroom in a couple of days, and I'm lying in bed in the morning worried about it because then I will get a stomach ache and then I won't have a comfortable day, for years I just thought going to the bathroom, and maybe when you're young, you don't have to think about it, but it's just an automatic thing. What I learned for me was if I picture my colon, I could, this is so stupid, but this helps me. I lie in bed and I just picture I am helping the food go through my colon. I just lie in bed. And I also actually take the time. I schedule time for myself in the morning. This sounds embarrassing. It's embarrassing to tell you. But I think that sort of is the truth about working the steps, too. I have to imagine what it is I'm going to be doing, and then I have to make it a priority. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to in my life. And then I have to tell you about it, no matter how embarrassing it is. Another thing about footwork. So, just to qualify, I was, I came into Overeaters Anonymous December 1975, and I consider my abstinence from February 11, 1981, so that's 29 years. And I've lost between 50 and 60 pounds. I'm a different person. I look differently, which helps me in this world, but I feel differently about myself. So this December, we were in Hawaii, my husband, my 20-year-old son, and his 20-year-old girlfriend, and we went dirt biking, which I'd never done before. And it was really hard, and it was really scary, and it was on that beautiful red dirt in Hawaii and Kauai, and we're on these dirt bikes, and they're like, the trail is rocks. It's really rocks. And you're like, you have a helmet. You know you have a helmet, but you think you're going to die. At least I did. And I'm trying to be so brave to keep up with these young people so that I'm a part of their lives still. And I am terrified to my bones. I know. And so we're bouncing over the rocks, and then I'm stopping, and I'm walking. You guys go ahead. You guys go ahead. And somewhere along the way, I lost my first pair of prescription glasses I've ever bought that were really expensive because I had my backpack on and it must have unzipped and popped out on that, you know, couple mile road. And so here's the footwork I did. First, I was really embarrassed that I had done it because I had spent so much money on these glasses. And then I told my husband I was going back to the trail the next day on my own. And then I drove the whole part where we rented the bikes, where we took the bikes, the whole part up this long, long, long drivable road. Then I parked the car, and I walked and walked and walked and walked and walked, and I had a notepad, and I left a note at the head of the trail. Then I talked to two rangers, and I gave them my phone number and my email address. I talked to five women who were biking. One of them told me I should have gone to Costco to get my prescription. I'll do that next time. Actually, it was really interesting because I kept thinking, so what is the message here besides my being embarrassed? And, well, the message was I was able to actually be present on that trail that day and see the beauty. I had no fear. I was walking. And it was really a pleasure, profound pleasure to be alone on the trail. I hike a lot in my life, but it's usually not safe to hike alone. But I was alone on this trail, and it was such a blessing to be alone with me and my higher power and to believe that I was going to find those glasses. And I looked and I looked and I prayed and I prayed and I wrote notes and I went to the police station. The rangers told me to go to the police station, and I reported it, and guess what? There were no glasses. So I can do the footwork. I don't always know what the result is. So the end result is I went back to my my eye doctor, and I said I really couldn't afford to spend the same amount of money on these glasses, but I really liked them. And so he gave them to me at his cost, which was amazing to me. And last night they said they were ready, and I was in Santa Monica, and they were really closing. And I said, is there any way you can leave them in a safe place where I can pick them up? Because I was getting headaches without them, and also because I'm vain and I wanted you to see my glasses. That was really more important than the headaches. So, and here's the irony of it all. This wonderful receptionist at the eye doctor found the donut store up the corner of the street, and she left them with a little Vietnamese woman who spoke no English at the donut store. And I was thinking, I'll bring the woman flowers, but I didn't have time. So I called my husband from the donut store, and I said, you need to have some donuts tonight, you know, or I got to buy you something. So I was about to go to the 50th anniversary of Overeaters Anonymous, but first I stopped at a donut store. there's so much I want to tell you. I do a 10-step every night, and I write to my sponsor. My sponsor now lives in Montana, and I email it to her. Knowing that I'm going to report in, my food is different. I also count calories, and I started doing that 5 years ago. Years and years ago, I would have been horrified. I thought it was ridiculous to count calories. It was something against what I believed. But for me, the way I do it today, it's about being mindful, and it's actually a very spiritual thing for me. I have 5 minutes. Thank you. It means that I am really present with my food and accountable. It means if I decide I want to have a big breakfast, that's fine. But I report in at the end of the day, and I would like it to be a certain number of calories. I'd like it to be under 1,700 calories. I do some exercise, so that is acceptable to me. So that means that then I can adjust my food for the rest of the day, or I tell my sponsor that I sometimes have 2,100 calories. And it seems at the time when I'm writing to her and I'm listing all these foods, besides telling her about my day, besides writing a gratitude list, besides learning something about what happened that day, when I write down my food and tally up the calories, it seems so embarrassing. I'm so horrified when I have 1,700 instead of 1,690. I swear to God, it seems to make a difference. But as soon as I tell her, it loses its power. And when I tell you this, I imagine it doesn't make any difference to you, right? So I still think about food a lot. And the comfort I get is that so did Bill W. think about drinking. And for some of us, it goes away sometimes, but not always. It's not part of the guarantee of this program, but I have this amazing life. I'm a children's book writer, and I've been what's called a mid-list author, sort of not particularly noticed and kind of chugging along, and I had some rough times in the last couple of years. And this year I got a pretty wonderful award, and my computer crashed, so I couldn't really respond to any of the requests for anything, and the irony, of course. So last night my husband sent me an email. He had sent out the press release to 40 of his clients and of our friends and said, I'm very proud of my wife for winning this award. And you know what? That touched me more than winning the award. He is an amazingly generous person, and I feel so incredibly lucky to have met him and married him. We talk about, for the newcomers, thank you. We talk about a wild elephant being tethered to a trained elephant, and that's how that elephant learns. And I'm really an advocate of that. My experience in OA is I tie myself to a sponsor and I try to hear what they're saying. I don't think I always hear everything, but I try to do what they're saying. And at one point in OA, what helped me the most seemed so ridiculous from the outside. It seemed like, drink the grape Kool-Aid kind of thing. This woman, at one point I was asked to go to a meeting a day, and I ended up going to 222 meetings in every single day. And in this case, my sponsor, who was very strict, she was Hitlerian. And at some other point in my life, I would have run, and it would have been a wrong choice for me. So it's not the right choice for everybody. But for me at that time, I was such a nice person that I was allowed to slide a lot in my life. And for me, following the rules was really important. It had nothing to do with otherwise nice, was like doing the work, the footwork. So that meant that I had to get to each meeting on time. If I wasn't on time, it didn't count. I had to find another meeting, and I had to stay. I also had to find three people at the meeting and get their phone number. I couldn't get their phone number just from the list. I had to go up and ask them their number. It has nothing to do with calling them. It had to do with me coming out of myself. And then I waited and measured my food for all that time. I don't do that today. I go to one meeting, a one on-the-ground meeting, which I started. The other thing is that I have learned to start meetings that work for me in my convenient time and within a walking distance of my house, an hour for me. And for me, in our meeting, because I don't do a lot of the tools on my own, we do a lot of them in the meeting. We write, we pitch, we meditate. All of the things that I don't always fit in my life, I do meditate on my own, and I've learned to do that, but that came years into my program. So last night, you talked about in this reading today, sometimes we're rebellious, and I'm still rebellious. So last night, I was hungry, and I wanted more. I had a whole day of working with what my husband helps me. I don't call them the old people anymore. My husband, my mother and my uncle are living together, and she's 87, he's 89, and it's been rough, and I'm their main caretaker, but we live about an hour apart. So last night I was up in Santa Monica driving around and just driving, and it was a really hard time. So after the OA play, I came home and I was still hungry, and I had some calories left, and I said to myself, just start writing the email. Just start adding up your food. You can have more later. You can. And as long as you add in, I just need you to sit down and just start writing it. Which is just, it's just changing the channel. You know, it's just getting away for a minute. And I can have more, and there are times that I send to my sponsor addendum. I also had a bunch of grapes today. Oh, I forgot about that one tablespoon of peanut butter or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's the honesty. As someone had talked, as Barbara had talked, there are things in my house today that I don't eat. It used to be that my sponsor said, if you were an alcoholic, would your family be willing to take the alcohol out of your house for a while? And so for a while, my husband had his cookies in the trunk of his car. He was willing to do that. And for me today, it's not important, and and that's not the important part of this program. And so I want to leave you with, if you can be honest, even at the risk of embarrassment, I think that's where to start. Thank you very much.
Before our next speaker comes up, could I please have you pass the Ask It Basket to that corner, please, for me? Pass the Ask It Basket. Ask It Basket. And Michael will now speak.
Hi, I'm Michael, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi. It's a real pleasure to be here and celebrate OA's 50th birthday. I never thought I would, I was never worried about Social Security. I was never worried about growing old. I was never worried about getting wrinkled because I just figured I wasn't going to be around that long. I never really wanted to kill myself, but I do know I was waiting for it all to be over. My top weight is about 275 pounds. I came into OA when I was 22. I never thought I would actually be speaking on a long-timers panel, but I guess I'm almost 24 years abstinent now, so I guess thank you, GOD. There is a power that has enabled me to live my life abstinently. And for me, I have learned over the years that that is what I am here to learn how to do. I don't want to just learn how to not eat. That's not good enough. I want to learn how to live my life abstinently. And what is my role here in the world? What is God's will for me? If it's just about not eating, I don't want it. That's not enough. And what's interesting is as I get older, I'm starting to learn what my higher power's will is for me. And I'm really glad it's not over. I don't want to leave Overeaters Anonymous now. I don't want to miss the show. I don't want to miss the next chapter. When I came into OA, the topic is working the program on a daily basis. So I wanted to try to have the time to be able to share with you what I do now with 24 years of abstinence in order to try to maintain. We heard in the play last night, what we really do have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. When I came into OA, I certainly heard identification. I heard people talk about what food did to them. It made them 275 pounds. They were bulimic and it made all their teeth fall out, their hair fall out. They got wrinkles. But what I was most impressed with, I think, looking back is when they would talk about what food did for them, it made them have the ability to get through the day. It gave them the ability to turn away from their fears. I've learned now, I think, that what it really did for me is it gave me a temporary distraction. Unfortunately, if you do that for the first 18 or 21 years of your life, you find that what happens is you're 22 years old and you're 275 pounds and you haven't lived your life. And I find today, even when I want to compulsively overeat, it's because I want to be temporarily distracted. I don't want to have to talk to that boss about that important thing. Or I don't want to do the dishes that are in the sink. Or I don't want to make that amends that I need to make. I want to be temporarily distracted. And I think that an extra this or an extra that is going to solve the problem. But it doesn't. It just temporarily distracts me. So I need to learn, how do I go ahead and live my life and do that thing and not be temporarily distracted? In the beginning years of my abstinence, it was a lot about staying abstinent. And I've done everything from, did I ever weigh and measure my food? Sure, I've done that. To not eating certain foods, to being strict, to not being strict, to being a vegetarian, to eating, you know, no carbs. I've done all those things. And they were obviously exactly what I needed to focus on at the time. One thing I have learned is the way to keep what I have today is the first thing I had to do was clean away the wreckage of my past. It does say that in the literature. And it talks about action is the magic word. And my first sponsor would always say, there's no chapter in the big book called Into Thought. There's one called Into Action. So there was action. There was definitely action. Steps 4 through 9, as we heard in the play last night, are about clearing away the wreckage of my past. I think if I were walking around today with what I call was my little red wagon that was chained to my leg that had just all my crap in it, that no matter how pretty I dressed myself up, no matter how much cologne I put on, no matter how fast I ran, that red wagon was always with me, with my stuff in it. I don't have a red wagon today. And it's not anything special that I've been able to wave some magic wand. It's because I was given a gift of this way of life, this design for living on how to get rid of that. I was really quite, I wasn't going to say terrified. That's not the truth. I didn't know how to live my life. It was actually easier to go back and clear away the wreckage of my past because I'd lived that. I knew what that was, going back to my, you know, my brother and going back to the places I stole from and going to the people back that I lied to, finding out the exact nature of my wrongs. I thought I was a lying, stealing, unkind, judgmental asshole. What I found out was I'm afraid. The reason I lie is because I'm afraid the truth isn't enough. The reason I steal is because I'm afraid to ask for what I want, and I don't think I'm going to get it. But there did come a time where I needed to move on with what my life was about. What I don't want to talk to you about is I would be up here and I would always hear people talk about prayer and meditation, and they would talk about their morning meditation, and they would talk about their 10th step at night. And I would always kind of go, Yeah, you know, I do 10th step. And I did. Occasionally. And I certainly must have developed some kind of muscle in my body to develop this relationship with my higher power, because I know I on my own couldn't do it. But the idea of doing something daily, doing something every day to improve my conscious contact with my higher power, that wasn't really something I was doing. And I never really wanted to admit it to you or to myself. Sure, I'd get up and say, God, please keep me clean, sober, and abstinent today. But the actual idea of taking time out of the day, now believe me, in the meantime, I was doing a lot of service and certainly going to meetings. The literature says working with other compulsive overeaters will save the day. Nothing will so much ensure immunity from compulsive overeating than intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. It works when all other measures fail. And so I have spent a great deal of time. I've done service with David. I've done service with a lot of people. I've served on the board of trustees. I've been my secretary. I have my home meeting. I still have a home meeting. I live up in Sacramento now. And, you know, we worked on this play together, Elizabeth and I and Mary Pat, and I came down once a month because that was service. But I'm going to mention the play only one more time. There was a song that was important for me that we wrote. Meditation will need all the time you can give, one day at a time for as long as you live. And I thought, meditation will need all the time you can give. And that's been my experience, that I have to take time out to do that. But how? How? And my current sponsor, who I've had for so long now I can't even remember how long it's been, we were at a convention. I'm not going to be able to probably share exactly what happened, but my recollection was that we were chatting, and she brought up the idea of making an appointment with my higher power every day. And I thought, an appointment? Now, I'm at work, and I have appointments all the time. I have a 3:30 production meeting. I have a 5 o'clock staff meeting. I have a 4:30 executive committee meeting. I have a meeting, all-staff meeting on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. I always show up for those meetings. I actually wouldn't dream of not showing up to those meetings because they're important and they make the rest of the week run so much more smoothly. So I make an appointment with my higher power every morning and every evening so I can find out what God's will is for me. And I didn't know where to go to look. And we were reading the big book, and it actually, for me, tells me exactly how to do it. It says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter. We believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Oh, okay. And it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Let us think about a year from now. Let us think about what we did, you know, 50 years ago. No, let me think about today. What am I going to eat? What am I not going to eat? do I need to plan my food today? Am I going to be taken care of? Oh, do I need to shave today? Do I need to shower today? Do I need to exercise today? I need to go to the theater. Oh, I need to do that. Oh, and tonight I need to do this. Oh, I need to do all those things. Okay, please, God, give me the power to do that. If those are the things I'm supposed to do, if that's what I'm supposed to do today, please give me the power to carry that out. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it be devoid from self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. So the opposite of self-pity for me is gratitude. So every morning, is this the truth? Yes. I try to be grateful that I can walk, that I can see, that I have a car, that my sponsor lives in Sacramento also. Dishonesty. Please help me be honest. Help me be real. Help the truth be enough. Help me not tell lies to myself to justify my wrongdoings. And self-pity. We usually conclude this period of meditation. Oh, this is meditation. Oh, okay. With a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step should be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. Okay, God, tell me what I'm supposed to do. Let me know what I'm supposed to do. Give me the power to be able to do it. We ask especially from freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves if others will be helped. Oh, so help me be kind. Help me be honest. Help me be tolerant. As we go through the day, we pause. We what, Michael? We pause. When agitated or doubtful, when agitated, so that's upset, fearful, scared, and ask God for the right thought or action, constantly reminding ourselves, oh, I got to be reminded that we are no longer running the show. It works. It really does, it says. And then in the evening it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. How do we review it, Michael? Constructively. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, resentful, and afraid? Is this the truth? It is the truth. After 24 years, it is the truth. At night, I reflect on my day so that I don't have to carry anything new into that red wagon. And if there's an amends that needs to be made, I need to do it. Could we have done anything better? And I look at that constructively. And it says, we are careful to not drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because that would diminish our usefulness to others. And my job, and I will end with this, is to be the best Michael that I can be. And you know, what's a Granny Smith's apple's job? It's to be green. It's not to be red. It's not to be yellow. What color are apples? I would have said red, but you know, a Granny Smith apple is green. And a Granny Smith apple has a very distinct taste. It's not particularly sweet. It's not particularly soft. It's very distinct. And so if I'm supposed to be a Granny Smith apple, then my job is to wear my greenness and my tartness and my sharpness with pride, not in an arrogant way, but because that is God's will for me, and that is who I'm supposed to be. So I hope 24 years from now, I'm continuing to learn, continuing to grow, because ultimately when you're green, you are growing. So thank you.
Are these folks wonderful or what? So I've got a lot of questions and not a lot of time, so we'll just jump right into your questions. This is a question that is not directed to any particular speaker, so any of you who feel so inclined, it's a two-part question. What is your favorite tool and why? What is the most unusual way you use the tool?
Only at the mic, hon. Thanks.
I'm Jerry, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and my favorite tool is writing, because no matter what's going on, I don't have to call anyone. I can just do it on my own. And for me, I get to the truth when I write.
Uh, Talk about how you did amends. What helped you in doing your amends?
We'll do it. I'm Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater. I did my amends because I knew I had this wonderful gift called abstinence, and I would probably not be able to keep it if I didn't do it. I asked my higher power to help me on each and every single one, and one of the greatest ones I ever did was making amends to Mayfair Market. I don't know if they have Mayfair here anymore, but I had stolen a lot of food from that market, and I had gotten caught for shoplifting, and I was told that if I ever went in that market again that I would go to jail. I don't know if it was true, but it certainly made me very fearful. And I would drive by the Mayfair Market and think, oh, wow, I need to be temporarily distracted from that feeling. But I remember going in there, and I wrote out my check for the food that I thought I had stolen over the years, and I asked my higher power to help me say the right thing, and I went in and I said, I'm an abstinent member of Overeaters Anonymous, and one of the things we do is we go back and try to clear up the wreckage of our lives. And I shoplifted here. It was wrong of me. I'm sorry that I did it, and I would like to rectify the situation. And I would also like to be a patron of your establishment again, because one of the things we do is we try to become citizens of the world again. And he looked at the check, and he looked at me, and he said, I think we can arrange that. And I went that day, and I went through his style, and I bought a can of tuna for 99 cents. And they scanned it, and I gave them my dollar, and I walked out of there a free man. And that's the power of the program. And take the action and ask God to help you do the footwork.
Okay. How important is it to live the program one day at a time? In other words, do your problems with life at work or home ever go away?
Barbara, compulsive overeater. You know, the program is my only frame of reference that's worked to live my life. I mean, I always go back to I'm powerless, came to believe and made a decision. And everything that I do and I have problems with, and that kind of helps center me and know that it's not up to me and that I have help. And then all the way I do with food. I mean, I do in my life. I do one thing at a time. I keep coming back. I show up. I reach out. I grew up in Overeaters Anonymous, and, you know, it's a great way to live.
How do you deal with resentment? By the way, some of these questions may have been covered during shares, but I missed part of it, so somebody else who didn't talk about that can address it if you've already addressed the topics for the questions. Anybody want to talk about resentment? I can go on to the next one. We should address it. Who would like to talk about resentment?
I'm Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater. Well, I'm reminded resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more compulsive overeaters than anything else. And I have had a long-standing resentment with somebody at work for a long, long time, and I have had to continue to work. I have had to continue to work and ask, try to make that person a sister of mine, who's somewhat challenging, that I love anyway, and that I work with. But the truth is I've done a couple of inventories about her. That it takes action. I can't wish them away, the literature says. I always like to, you know, when people call me, I'm like, you know, my magic wand's on the blink. So my experience has been, I know people talk about the resentment prayer. I have tried that as well. Please, God, let have peace, tolerance, health, happiness, prosperity, wealth, you know, all those things, and that has helped a lot. But it's hard. I think it does require action. And thank goodness there is a design for living. And you know what? It has continued to get better. I would say I don't have a resentment with that person anymore. It continues to sometimes be challenging, but there are often times when I'm able to see the good in everybody, including her. So that's my experience.
Hi again, I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. What sometimes works, it doesn't always work, is when I really look at my part and I really see what I could do differently and how, you know, I had a part in the situation. And then I could change my part and do something different, and it's not all them. And sometimes the resentment just dissipates. Not all the time. I mean, when jealousy comes in and gets mixed in, sometimes it's a little more difficult. But anyway, I found looking at my part and realizing I have a choice to do something different really helped.
I make a compulsive overeater. I'll just give you two examples. And I haven't done this in a long, long time, but I remember once we had a painter come and they were painting all the shutters, the wooden shutters in one of our bedrooms, and they did a really crappy job. And they had promised something they weren't able to deliver, and I was just, we were in the middle of a remodel. If anybody has ever been in the middle of a remodel, it's like being in a war in Lebanon or something, living through the bombings. So my sponsor said to write out the prayer every day, which was, God bless Alfredo, or whatever his name was. May he have health, happiness, peace, and prosperity, and me too. And I had to write it out every day for 14 days. And I didn't see how that was going to help, that tightness in my heart. But some of it, some of program for me is just getting on a bicycle and just spinning your wheels for a while. You know, some of it is just letting time go past. There's another woman in my industry that I really don't like. Not very nice. And I have, in various ways through the years, I have done different things, and it continues to come back differently for me. So my experience, strength, and hope in that is to understand and love that part of myself that is human. I have some jealousy towards her. I have some stuff that maybe will not go away, and I have a great acceptance in myself about that. I won't hurt her, but I also won't let her hurt me.
We have a stack more questions, but just before I read the next one, I just want to take a personal minute, if you don't mind. I'm going to be leaving after this panel today. There are four people who are taking over for running the next four panels, and if you're all in the room, you know who you are. I thank you very much. For the people who are speaking this afternoon and tomorrow, I thank you very much. I'm not going to be able to be here to hug you individually and to thank you very much, but I appreciate all the help and support. And the last thing I'd like to say is, not only do I have pneumonia, I found out yesterday they don't want me to come back to my place of employment anymore. So I just say that because you guys make it so I can stand up here and actually say that out loud and know that I'm going to be okay and know that I'm going to land on my feet because of what you've taught me for all these years. And that's my personal thank you to all of you, and thank you for indulging me in that. Okay, what is the difference between a slip and relapse? Ooh, did you hear that? Everybody goes, ooh.
You know, I heard that question at the last panel, and I want to reiterate with something that Janine said about semantics. I don't use the word slip, relapse, anything, and I think it really doesn't matter what you call anything. It's how you feel inside. And for myself, I don't abstain perfectly, and I haven't gone into relapse. But when I have a larger meal or something I'm not comfortable with, for me to continue to abstain and to continue to take care of myself, it means just the next meal, getting up and taking care of myself, sharing at a meeting, talking to a sponsor about it, just moving on and not beating myself. And that's why I'm still here 30 plus years, because I just have the ability to, when I'm not perfect, and it's, you know, and it's a lot of times I haven't been perfect, or I'm not comfortable with a food choice I've made or whatever, that I've just gotten up and said, you know, absence for me is just not binging, not out of control binging, not using food like an alcoholic would be binge drinking. So if I have a bigger meal, you know, and so now I'm not afraid that this morning when I went to the buffet here and I thought I was going to order off the menu and found out it was a buffet, that I didn't have to freak out and know that I wouldn't break my abstinence. It was just my head was, and I'm still a compulsive overeater, I want everything. What is healthy? What will I feel better about? And so I made healthy choices. It also means that I'm not going to skip lunch because I had a little bit more for breakfast. So, because that is the disease thinking, you know? It may mean if I'm going out to dinner and they're going to serve something heavier than I'd normally have, I might just have a bowl of soup for lunch or a small salad or a half a sandwich, something smaller than normal. But I have to eat three times a day. I can't play games. I have to just keep picking myself up. And I've seen too many people beat themselves, and it goes from a small meal to all of a sudden they've gained 100 pounds. So I don't want to follow that. Thank you.
This is a coveted multi-part question. Do you consider your sponsor or sponsees close friends now? And or have you fired or let go of sponsors or sponsees? Fired's too harsh a word for me.
Hi, April. I'm a compulsive overeater. This has been troubling for me, actually, for many years because I've had many different sponsors, and for many different years, I was on the phone all the time, clinging to them for like a lifeboat. And there have been times, for example, my current sponsor that I've had probably 15 years. She's a very, very big personality, and I don't know that I could be in the same room with her for very long because she's so overwhelming. But on email and occasionally when I phone her, she's the most incredibly loving, wonderful woman that I could ever curl up in a lap of and encouraged by. And in the same way, I have learned to accept into my hand whoever has approached me if there is space in my life, and I've learned to make boundaries so that I have reasonable time for the rest of my life. So if someone comes to me and I don't really like them, sometimes I will sponsor them anyways if I have the time, and that's scary. Generally, the people that I sponsor are not dear friends. I can count a handful of people that I've let into my life because I'm fairly guarded, but it doesn't matter. And I have so learned, especially from a current one that I'm sponsoring, so learned so much from that person. My one rule is that I always write to my sponsor first. I write that email before I open an email from people that I sponsor. I have to do that first. I have to take care of myself first. But a person that, you know, I didn't know very well has just wormed her way into my heart in a very special way. So.
Well, folks, please forgive my addled brain. For some reason, I thought the panel was going till noon, not 11:45, so you got an extra 15 minutes of recovery. And so please help me thank the speakers for sharing their experience and tonight. Who says an imperfection reigns? Okay, it does. Let's see. If you wish to, please stand where you are, join hands, and join me in the third step prayer.